Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And
how are you, John?
I'm good.
I tripped you up on the open, didn't I?
Yeah, you did. Well, these, you're getting tricky. It's 2/26/2013, and we're here again to discuss what happened in the stock market over the week and what might happen come Friday.
What's Friday? I mean, you mentioned this when we were kind of gearing up here doing our 10 counts.
That's when the sequester happens.
Who came up with that name? Because is it required to come up with names that people have no idea what it is to describe things that the government's doing?
I don't know who came up with the name, now that you mention it. I would assume,
mean?
I mean, Obama, it means, you know, a holdback or a, you know, you sequestration is where you grab a bunch of stuff and you push it down to a point. In other words, you're grabbing something and pushing it over into a box.
So the
Let's
thing is,
let's take a look at the
because honestly, I heard that word the first time I heard it. I said, "What in the world is that describing?" It sounds awful, but maybe not because I don't know what it is. You know, in terms of what they're describing.
It's a verb. It means to isolate or hide away something or something, which is kind of what I'm saying there. An example of the usage is the artist sequestered himself in his studio for 2 years. And the noun is a general cut in government spending.
Oh, so, really? Is that right?
Yeah.
Oh, well, I wonder if that's a recent entry.
Probably. It also means seize, isolate, impound, insulate, and yeah, that's it.
Mm. Well, let's talk about what that means, because I think that there are several things right now that are really kind of giving a pause to market participants. And that's the first thing. You know, if you remember something, the last two times we saw the same kind of thing happen where there was this potential for a drop-dead date, mm-hmm, for some kind of, you know, government action that was going to be very costly or cut spending, right? That was – the first time was the debt ceiling. And everybody was up in a tizzy on that one.
Right.
And markets were crazy. The second time – and then after that, it was like nothing. The second time around – was at the end of the year, where for about, I don't know, a few weeks beforehand, everybody was freaking out about this fiscal cliff issue. I even got caught up in it and had a fiscal cliff countdown clock on my website.
Nice.
Yeah. So now all of a sudden, you know, fiscal cliff comes and goes. In fact, is once it goes in the wee hours of the morning and it's kind of passed with, you know, whatever was the negotiation and essentially kicked most of it down the road, markets said hallelujah and went crazy. And this time around, the same is not happening. In fact, this time around, I think people are I guess they're numb to it. Investors said, you know what? I know what's going to happen. They're just going to do the same thing again. They're going to kick it down the road. They're going to make a fuss about it. They're going to make it a political sideshow. And then nothing's going to happen. And it's funny, but if you think about it, the time we should be worried about it is when nobody worries about it.
I agree with that. That's the old theory.
Right?
Yeah. No, everyone's telling you to buy everything. Everybody's happy. Things are rosy. That's when the market crashes.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree.
So here we go. On Friday, this is going to happen. And what is essentially going to happen, different than possibly some of the other phase-in kind of spending cuts that would happen, was that about $85 billion of spending cuts kind of gets whacked immediately. A lot of it in the military.
Yeah, but you know, these aren't really cuts. This is the joke of it. These are cuts in growth.
Not all of them. Not all of them.
No.
I agree with you, but not all of them.
Well, I mean, I suppose there's some people that didn't budget enough forward to take advantage of the typical situation. But as far as I can tell, most of this stuff is like, you know, it's not – the total spending, whether it's most of it or not, the total spending – with or without the sequestration is still going to be – with or without is still going to be more than last year. So how does this cause all this $750,000 jobs are going to be lost and everyone's going to be thrown in the street. Homeless is going to go on. They're going to have to release people from jail. I mean, you still have last year's budget.
Right. Well, there was no budget last year. Let's just also say.
Well, I mean, you still have last year's the same money that was spent last year is moving ahead. You're just not getting a raise.
Right, you're not getting a raise. There are some in the military, or at least in the defense area, there are some definite cuts that are going to go on there in the defense budget. And again, remember why they did this. Let's back up for a second. The whole point of this was that they needed this onerous, this hideously awful situation so that it would persuade Congress and the president to get something done prior to it being enacted. This was a choice, by the way. This whole sequestration issue was a choice. It was all about back a year ago or so when the debt ceiling had to be raised, and they said, okay, here's the deal. Congress said, we'll let you raise the debt ceiling X amount of dollars, but you know what? We are going to have to face the facts that we have to cut our spending. And in doing so, we're going to put a date that says we have to do it now. And you know, at this date, if nobody makes a decision, if nobody can come to an arrangement, then it's automatic, it goes in.
Right.
So
yeah, I remember that whole thing.
This is a choice. It's
well, they
not like
they expected not to come to this because both sides are idiots. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was Obama's idea to begin with, but then other side signed off on it in a minute. So I mean, you can't really blame either side.
Right. So this whole thing is actually about, I think it's almost $1 trillion. By the time, is it $1 trillion? Let me think about that. Yeah, it's close to $1 trillion over 10 years. And it's not just the one-time $85 billion.
Right, no, it continues.
So there will be some definite cuts. There will be some things that aren't hurt, et cetera. But even the Congressional Budget Office, who you know generally does an okay job at formulating some of the stuff, they're even saying that there's going to be a definite drag on the economy. You know, we have anywhere from a drop of 0.5% to a drop of 1% of GDP.
Yeah, and Bernanke said the same thing. Yeah, so, I mean, I have to assume they're correct.
I mean, they're correct, but you know what? We also don't know what that's on top of or what that is. So, in other words, if we had this great economy rolling and then all of a sudden you take a 1% cut and it was a 4%, which isn't great, but 4%, yeah, you're down to 3%. But if we have right now, we had a negative 0.1 print last for the first round of GDP. We'll see another round this Friday. But if we have let's call it a zero GDP, and all of a sudden we hit this, you know, it could hurt a lot more because now you don't have any of the growth and it's actually going backwards. You're retracing.
I think it's going to – I believe or feel that they're going to probably do some sort of a kick the can down the road and push this off, the same exact thing off again for another 3 or 4 months, which will really get nobody interested in it. And then I think that – I don't know. Whatever happens is not good.
But the law says there's an automatic spending cut or whatever it is. This automatic policy goes into place on this day. If we don't follow up on that, which would require a vote, of course, that people would Congress would have to reverse this law, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if they have this, first of all, the ability to do that with the current number of people who say they want to, you know, this to go through, or at least they're not going to bite it. But the second thing is, how much respect do we eventually just, or whatever's left of it, do we lose for Congress if they just one more time change a rule for their own benefit and for their own lack of any kind of abilities?
I think it's already in the tank. Mm. Whatever the case is, if they don't do something and Friday comes and goes, I think the market's going to crash.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of things happening. So we have that going on. We have what's going on if you've been following what's happening in Europe, a fascinating election in Italy. Now, as this election is going on, there's four different players. There's Monti, who's the current prime minister. You have Bersani, and you have this other guy, Giglio, and you have – I'm probably butchering these.
Yeah, you are.
Thank you. And you have Berlusconi. Okay? Now – two out of the four are criminals. That's a fact.
Yeah. Yeah, I know.
Okay?
Yeah.
We have a comedian who drew a lot of crowds, by the way.
Yeah. He's one of the criminals.
Yeah, exactly. We have Monti, who nobody likes anymore. This other guy who seems to be the guy that could probably do the right thing. And Berlusconi, who was recently ousted from office. This is a former, I think, opera singer. At least he thinks he is. He has a lot of albums out. The women love him in Italy. And somehow during the day, he comes up and he starts winning the whole battle.
Yeah, well, he has, you know, he's a big media mogul, so he, mm-hmm. you know, promotes himself well.
So now, as soon as I see this whole thing starting to change during the day, I said to some people in my office, listen, I am telling you, after this election is done, they're going to demand a recount and probably want a new vote, because this is just not going the way everybody wanted or thought it was going to go. Now, as Berlusconi is gathering steam throughout the day, the euro is rolling, okay? Because don't forget, he was involved and in charge when a lot of the crap happened with the overspending. And let's not forget that Italy, the small country that it is, has the third largest debt in the world. First is Japan, then the United States, then Italy, which is kind of hard to believe. Enormous. And inability to pay it back.
Right.
So now – that's the problem. Yeah. So now Berlusconi, who if he comes in, it's pretty much going to be a hung parliament with an inability to make any kind of decisions or to tackle the situation. And the euro just goes – I mean, once it's kind of like, okay, he's got the lead, he's done, the euro just gets squashed. And the futures on the Italian market are down like 4%. Today we wake up, Italian market's down 5%. Euro is still tumbling, or at least holding what came down pretty well. Oil's coming down. Our markets get cracked. Asia gets cracked, all because of little old Italy and this guy Berlusconi.
Well, there you have it. Doesn't take much. We're down to $1.30 on the euro.
Yep.
We just drop another 10 cents. That'd be great.
Mm-hmm. We also have the currency wars going on. We know about that, of course. I think the world's getting rather pissed off about the yen, even though we have the G20 not say anything. The yen has been moving around incredibly in the last few days. It's definitely been moving weaker over the last several months. But the last few days, there's been all of a sudden a turnaround. And I think a lot of that had to do with the fact that most hedge funds and currency players were on the short side. And when you have those many people on that side of the boat, and all of a sudden the boat rocks a little bit to the other, all of a sudden everybody starts covering, and all that massive covering comes in. And the Japanese market is so tied to it that they were down like 2.5% yesterday, 1.5% today. And we'll see what happens from here. But it may be to a point that it's a, in this case, a buy the news, sell the rumor, buy the news. Whereas the cabinet's going to be set, the prime minister is going to pick his player for the central bank chief or the Bank of Japan chief, and we'll see what happens. But watch the yen, folks. We're actually long the yen for our clients, and we've been trading around that.
And that means what? Because it's always like a backwards thing. If you're right. Long the yen, do you want the yen to go up?
We want the yen to strengthen against the dollar.
Right. That means you want the yen to go up towards 100.
No, towards 80.
Well, you went to.
Here's the thing. When you talk about the cross currency rate or the spot rate, you do it in relation to the dollar. So if the yen, let's just say it's at a number 95 right now, okay? If the yen goes to 100, that means it weakens. You know, you get $1 buys more yen, or the dollar strengthens. Look at it that way. Right? You can buy more yen with $1.
Right. Right, right. That would
so
be weaker.
That means It weakens. It's upside down here. So if I wanted to go to 80 or that other way, from the trading standpoint.
Yeah, you don't care. Not in terms of buying your next Lexus.
Right, exactly. And then China came out. This is all the things that are kind of in this big title of what's going on and markets finally waking up. China came out with their numbers this weekend, and their HSBC flash manufacturing number came in at 50.4, which was – lower than expectations, about 52 and change, and lower than last month's 53. So kind of interesting here that
number could be faked.
It could. Well, this is a private survey, actually, this one.
Oh, okay. Well, that's
good. It's not an official government, yeah. So what happens here is that we saw that China, which was kind of slowing down, their manufacturing was in the toilet, in contraction, and all of a sudden we saw about 1 month, or I'll even call it a month and a half, of better numbers. And now it's starting to move the other side, and they're furthering their clampdowns on property prices and how much you could buy and borrow. And you know they're still seeing significant upside pressure and inflation in their housing.
Right, because of the speculation.
Mm-hmm. And we have finally earnings. Earnings have been, of course, even though they're beating, 71% of the S&P have beaten estimates. But that's on much lowered estimates. And so I said, well, what does that matter? And I explained to him, I said something like this. Let's say that I'm on a diet and I want to lose 20 pounds. That's my goal, 20 pounds. And I go, and I got to lose this in 2 weeks. Okay, that's the expectation. And if I do that, everybody's happy. Well, about a week or so from now, I say, you know what? I've been thinking about this. I'm really going to try to lose 10 pounds. That's what, you know, within that period. Okay. So now I go and I weigh in, and I lost 12 pounds. Now everybody's cheering because I lost 12 pounds. I always thought I was going to lose 10. And now I lost 12. But you know what? We lose the sight of the original goal was 20. I really failed. So that's kind of like what's going on with earnings.
Yeah.
And so, you know, everybody's losing sight of the fact, but we like the fact that we're beating. And so, you know, stocks are kind of moving in, with that in mind. But if you look at the, I think I've mentioned this, but the overall year over years and the kind of cumulative numbers, they're not as good as we'd like to see them.
You know, yep. you had, yeah, and that's, it's, well, you know, it's a facade. So on the rundown here, you have something interesting.
Mm.
Which I've these stories keep coming. I mean, we actually mentioned this on the No Agenda show a couple of weeks ago, and, you know, the horse meat thing.
Oh.
And I'm starting to rethink this whole thing. Now, of course, IKEA Swedish meatballs, supposedly, which are very good.
Flavored with horse meat.
By the way, horse meat is good. I have first had horse meat tacos in Mexico some years back, and then when I went to Slovenia, the national dish there is essentially horse meat. They love eating horse meat. And, of course, in France they eat it, but then they have these butcher shops that have a horse head out in front. You can buy horse meat there. But in Slovenia, apparently a lot of these countries, I know that in Sweden they don't like to brag about their eating reindeer, but they love the stuff, and it's really outstanding. The same thing in Finland. But
and
the
Norway, too.
Yeah. No, right. And by
Norway
the way,
has actually a reindeer heart soup.
Well, I haven't had that, but I've had I've had reindeer pizza, I've had reindeer sausage, I've had reindeer steaks. Mm-hmm. And it's all the reindeer steaks and a California Cabernet, as a matter of fact. It's quite a good combination, coincidentally. Anyway, so I go to Slovenia. I'm hanging out with these guys, and they're telling me that, oh, yeah, you want to go to a horse meat place. And then they did it kind of like the Swedes. It's like, it was obvious at a point, because I did want to go, but at a point it was obvious that they wanted to go to a horse meat place. But they kept promoting the idea that, you know, we don't really eat this stuff, and it's nothing that we make a habit out of. It's just we just happen to have a place that they serve it. So we all ordered these big sirloins, and they were huge. They were really big. And so it's a dense meat. And I could only eat about half of mine. I was gobbling it down. And, man, these guys, they're all, like, with forks already. You're going to eat that. I mean, they were just chowing down on this horse. I mean, it was like they were just famished for horse meat. So
is there a certain particular horse breed?
I don't know.
Probably not going to eat a stallion.
I think they just – I think they put the horse to work or maybe race him and then they eat him. I have no idea now that you mention this or something. Mm-hmm. But there's something suspicious about this because this story has been too much legs. It's been going on too long. They're finding horse meat everywhere. Are they trying to promote the idea that horse meat's not a bad thing to eat? Or I'm not sure, but there's something amiss at this point because of this IKEA thing. That was the end. Now I'm thinking there's something up.
And when you start seeing like the news galloping along with this kind of stuff, you know what I'm saying?
Please.
It gets very concerning, you know? No, but seriously, I have a
question. Of course, when you eat horse meat, you get the trots.
Yeah, of course. Listen, have you ever actually – I haven't gone into an IKEA. I got to admit it. There's one not too far from me. The thought of buying something I have to put together and paint is
– No, you don't paint anything. It's all painted.
Oh, it's painted. Then let me stop there. And the thought of putting something together?
They give you a couple of screws and a Allen wrench, and you just have to put a thing. There's very little to it. There's maybe five things you got to screw on. It's very minor.
Mm-hmm. The only thing that I want to do when I'm doing, I want to open a door to be delivered when it comes to furniture.
Yeah,
so
well,
that's me. That's me. That doesn't mean I'm right. That's me.
You should go to an IKEA if you've never been to one. It's a fantastic place.
I go to an IKEA, and there's a restaurant in there, I guess?
There's a couple. Actually.
There's a few restaurants. Okay, a couple of restaurants in the IKEA. And people go shopping there, and then they get tired or whatever, and they maybe say, hey, let's go get lunch, and they eat there.
The lunch thing doesn't seem to be a real popular item. They do have a food area where you can buy stuff to take home. But I don't ever seen that lunch place packed by any means.
But that's where they have the IKEA horse balls.
Yes.
Hmm. So what I don't understand is how the horse meat, and this is, I guess, obvious, the obvious issue, how is it getting into everything?
That's what I'm wondering. That's what now I'm thinking that something's up about this. This is very suspicious.
Hmm. Well, we'll see what happens from there, but who knows? I mean, it kind of reminds me a little bit of the whole – remember the lead poisoning around Christmas time and the Chinese
– Oh, right, because the Chinese paint on the toys.
Yeah, and it was right around Christmas time, so you'd buy American. Remember that whole thing?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't know. It seems a little
Maybe they're trying to queer the horse – the meatball business that IKEA has been slowly taking over. I have no idea.
Ah, it could be kind of trying to. I see what you mean. Yeah, planting a story so that the meatball
the meatball
consortium,
mafia
yeah,
has planted a story.
Okay, let's couple of things. So I want to tell you some other things. Now, the drop on yesterday, was the worst daily move in markets since November.
Mm.
Bernanke was a big part of the reason. Last week, he came out with a comment that was construed as he may eventually, one day, it could be 20 years from now, but slow down the bond purchases. Okay?
Oh.
And the next day, the markets dropped. And Friday, don't you know it, the parade of Fed speakers came out to defend the policy of very easy monetary policy for the markets. You had just a whole... I don't even know what you call them, but a gaggle of them maybe, or a swath of the Fed speakers come out on TV. And, of course, you know, they line right up with CNBC and the first thing in the morning, first thing, you know, talking about, we're going to keep engineering the bonds for some time. And, you know, it all depends on how they want to kind of regulate markets, I suppose. But that's what kind of happened there. Then Bernanke was speaking in front of Congress today. Markets were wiggling all around with that, you know, but of course, he somehow in the end, the summation was, no, we're going to continue doing this for some time. Although he did comment that no matter what he does, he cannot pull the economy into growth considering the current fiscal issues at hand. And that means the sequestration and all that.
Yeah, he was moaning about that.
Yeah.
He said it was going to hurt the economy.
Mm-hmm.
But interest rates will stay low.
Stay low. And they're thinking about – I even saw a headline the other day that said that the Fed may be considering a negative interest rate.
Oh, geez. I haven't – that I did not see.
I saw that. I said, now we have to – let's move on.
So
I mean, that's ridiculous.
So in other words, you have to keep paying
– How does that? No, can I borrow money? Sure.
You borrow some money and then you have to pay them. How's that work? They pay you. They pay you, right. So I borrow money.
You'll ask me for 100 grand, and I'll say, sure, and I'll pay you 2,000 a year interest to keep it.
Yeah. Here, keep the money. Here, have some more money. Keep it. We don't want it back.
Right. But at the same time, we'll allow credit cards to have 19, 20, 25% interest rates.
Yeah. Well, that's supposedly to pay for the fraud, because they don't want to, which they don't seem to want to do anything about.
Some notes on banks. So we've been seeing some headlines crossing that I thought I just found it very surprising. So a couple of days ago, we saw Goldman Sachs was going to be laying off, I don't know, 4,000 or 5,000 employees. JP Morgan came out with a little headline that said they were going to be looking to lay off about 4,000 and 17,000 people over the next couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I find that really interesting because I thought banks' profits were really robust and things are great, and what's happening, right?
Yeah, really, what's happening? So, what's happening?
Well, I think it's a lot to do with the new market, you know, with lack of volume and machines and automation having the upper hand in terms of delivery of securities and trading of securities. Prop desks are closing down or at least shrinking up a bit. Liquidity is not there, so they can't do anything about that. And, you know, the trading environment – listen, I have friends – who were very successful market makers for years. And as they took the spreads down, remember the old quarter spreads or eighths on a stock, you'd buy a stock, it was trading at $40 and you bought it 40 and a quarter.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now the stock's trading at 40, you buy it at 40.01. That's the spread.
Hmm.
So in the old days, the market maker would take the risk. They say, hey, for a quarter, I can get rid of something for a quarter, right? So I'll take the quarter risk, and I'll sell it to somebody else, and maybe I'll make it, you know, spread out an eighth. I'll make an eighth on the deal, you know, no big deal. And they do that all day long. Well, now, if you take a stock and you hold it and you do market making on it and you have an inventory, your only benefit is the potential of 1 cent. So you'd have to kind of like maybe go and sell to somebody else for a, you know, if you're going to kind of offload it for a half of 1 cent. And it's just not there. And the risk is much higher now. So they don't do that. And most of the major market makers are out of business. Now they've turned to algorithms and machine trading and high-frequency trading, and machines just doing the actual transactions through ECNs. ECNs like it used to be Archipelago or Instanet or, you know, whatever else is out there. No longer is it just a NYSE, the NASDAQ. Now you have all these other parties that are doing the trading.
Huh.
So they've kind of just out of a job, and a lot of these traders are out of jobs.
Yeah, so it looks like.
Mm-hmm. So crude oil is finally coming down in price. Actually, the price is the lowest of this year. We saw a big drop the other day on, it was on Thursday or Friday of last week. I mean, all of a sudden, crude's been holding really well. All market conditions, holding and holding and holding and holding. Remember, it was 97. It was just holding. Market sold off a little bit here or there. It holds. Well, it couldn't hold the other day. You had the dollar coming up like crazy. You had all of a sudden this massive amount of people that were long crude. And crude came down about 2.5% in one day, especially after the inventory numbers came out. And then it kept on dropping. I think it's at, I don't know, let's call it 93 right now.
92.88.
Yeah, which is not low, but a lot lower than it was. And we'll see tomorrow. Department of Energy is coming out with their Wednesday morning inventory numbers at 10:30 a.m. What you want to look for is the amount of drawdown compared to estimates on oil, gasoline, and distillates, and also the refining capacity. But the three of those that you want to look for, particularly on gasoline, because here's the funny thing. And this is what's pissing everybody off. Oil prices have come down, let's call it, what, 3% round number? Right?
Yeah, sounds right.
Maybe what that? $3? Yeah, 3%, 3, 4, 4% from the top. Gasoline prices have not budged. As a matter of fact, they're going up.
Yeah.
So people are kind of scratching their heads saying, wait, I don't get this. Now, there's nothing to get. Nobody's ripping you off. Well, you may be getting ripped off, but nobody's particularly ripping you off in this deal because gasoline inventories and the amount they have kind of in stock has been actually being drawn faster than expected in the last several reports. And a lot of that is due to the fact that, hey, if gasoline prices are going up, why not take some inventory on hand and then maybe sell it at a higher price in the future? So you see this kind of happening when you see the trend moving in a certain direction because, you know, when things move up, hey, why not buy it earlier, the old inflation concept, and then sell it later at a higher price? So that's what's happening with gasoline. Now, that may not be happening starting this week because you start to see inventories building and people not buying as much. It's in the middle of the winter.
Yeah, there's this spot where this idea doesn't work. It actually has the opposite effect, and you have to dump the stuff at a lower price, which right. could happen.
And that's the kind of place, when you see that happening, where you get short.
Right.
Because you get a cascade, just like that happened to the yen this week, or last week, this week, where everybody was on the short side of the yen, and all of a sudden the yen is starting to move the other way, and everybody's got to bail ship. So that's the kind of the sweet spots if you can find those. Anyway, let's see. Okay, this is something I think you'd be interested in. Did you see the news about Maker's Mark?
No, what about Maker's Mark? The bourbon?
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Been around how many years? Hundreds?
No. That's actually a recent brand.
Maker's Mark is? Okay.
Yeah, it was a bourbon connoisseur who developed this brand and put the wax on the top and all the rest of it. And I think it was in the 60s or 70s.
I thought it was around from the like 20s, 30s. Okay, but either way.
He may have taken an old name, but believe me, it's a fairly new product. Fairly new. Still at least 50 years old, I think. I don't know. You can look it up. But anyway.
Has a good following, you know, in the bourbon crowd.
It's actually a credible bourbon.
Yep. Well, they make an announcement. They're having difficulty keeping up stock, it seems, somehow, in some countries and some areas.
Bourbon has become a trendy almost out of the blue. In fact, some of my favorite bourbons I can't even get anymore. And it's just become hot. It's been a hot ticket.
Well, here's what's interesting about this. So they have to figure out what to do. So what are your choices? Choices are, well, yes, we'll expand capacity and manufacturing of it, right? Well, okay.
Well, yeah, that doesn't
do that
really work.
It takes a while to...
It takes at least a decade or 20 years before you can...
So the second best thing would be maybe raise prices and start maybe less people, maybe... Nope, they take the third. Water it down.
What?
Yep. Water it down. They're going to bring down the alcohol content.
It's like the candy bar guys.
A lot of people were not happy. I just want to say that. I mean, people were pissed. And
so what did they bring it down to? What was the
I think
original?
It went from like an 86 to maybe an 80.
I don't think it was 86 ever. Let me take a look.
Take a look. Miracle of the internet is with us.
Yes. Maker's Mark alcohol change.
Wow, getting very specific. In quotes or not?
No.
No quotes. You know what I've been doing lately for those kind of things?
Oh, okay, here it is.
I would type in Maker's Mark News.
You could do that. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of different ways. I don't like to do a search twice, so I put in my search is very aggressive in terms of what I put in it. Mm-hmm. And so I get usually always nail it. There's at least, I say the whole page has got this stuff on there. So they were doing a 90 proof.
Oh, 90, okay.
Which is not uncommon for a bourbon. And they're dropping it to 80, which is actually more common.
That was the first round of news.
And the second round?
It was protest, whether they're not doing it. They couldn't take the heat.
Well, this is right here. It says resuming production at 45% alcohol.
But this really, I mean, had people in an uproar. I mean, I guess I don't know what I mean. I don't think there'll be a difference. I don't know. Maybe there's a difference in the taste a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, how much would, if you didn't tell anybody, it wouldn't have been such a big deal. On the other hand,
someone would have noticed and made a big fuss.
Yeah. And like what's happening with Anheuser-Busch, they're being sued for watering down their beers.
They could have brought out Maker's. I mean, there's ways of doing this. You could have brought out Maker's Mark 80 and just called it that. And diverted a bunch of the 90 to this 80 production and keep that price the same and raise the price on the other stuff, and you could probably have gotten away with it. There was methodologies available to them, but they obviously screwed it up. Yeah,
and you could have done something like a unbelievable advertising slogan around, or something like, a smoother choice for the more casual bourbon drinker.
You could have done that too. There's a lot of things you can do.
Well, they pissed a lot of people off. But anyway, and I was mentioning Anheuser-Busch is being sued for watering down their beers. Now, I don't know about you. Do you ever have Busch beer or...
How would you know?
I have no idea. That's exactly what I was going to say. I mean, I my daughter goes to FSU, and they drink this, I don't know if it's Anheuser-Busch, Natural Light, Natty Light, they call it. What is this? They said, that's what we buy because we could buy a lot of it for a small amount of money. I said, I mean, why bother? It's horrible. We call it Nasty Light, actually.
It's called what light?
Natural Light.
Natural Light.
That's what I think it's Anheuser-Busch Natural Light or something like that. The name of the beer is Natural Light.
Huh.
Horrible.
I'm sure it is.
Horrible. Let's see. All right. So, hey, a quick pop quiz for you, okay? What do you think? Just think for a second without maybe looking here. What was the most frequent and largest holding or what stock was held in the largest amounts overall by hedge funds?
I don't know, actually. I would guess one of the, like IBM would come to mind, Microsoft maybe, Apple possibly.
Apple. Apple was the number one held. I mean, everybody had it, right? How many? First of all, everybody was with a buy target on it, right? All the sell side analysts. There was hardly any hedge fund that didn't have this because it was a proxy for the markets. So you might as well have a piece of that. And if you can have the markets, you might as well have a piece. And this has outperformed for years, right?
Yeah, well. Yeah.
And they have all this cash on hand. You can make the whole argument. Oh, the P.E. ratio, the cash flow, da-da-da-da. Okay. Well, just recently, they were outflanked by another stock. And it's kind of a whole different thing. Any guesses?
Microsoft?
Nope. Hold on. AIG.
What?
Yep.
Wow.
Number one holding by hedge funds, AIG, which really makes you just wonder. Now, have you ever looked at an AIG chart, by the way?
Not recently. Let's go look at one.
This is now. Do me a favor. When you look at this chart, I want you to do, everybody should do this. This is really fascinating. AIG is a symbol, but make sure to put in a 10-year basis on it. You know, like in other words, expand it for 10 years.
So I want to go to stock charts, right?
Yeah, something. Yeah, exactly. Well, actually, may I suggest you start off with a 1 year? Just start off with one.
Okay, hold on. And I'm going to put in, where are we? I don't use this that much.
There's a custom thing, and it says like time frames, and
AIG.
Just do AIG. And then put in the time frame of 1 year. This is a good place to start.
Let me kill this phone. Hold on 1 second. Yeah, we're at 39. That's good enough. Oh, of course the phone stopped just in time. All right.
I'll pick it up. I'll pick it up when you tell me. Tell me to say go.
No, we're good. It's fine. I don't have to go to the phone.
You don't have to go to the phone? Okay. No. So it started off with this one-year look. So it went from, let's say, 30 to 37, let's call it. You see that?
Yeah, I'm looking. Yeah, okay. I see it.
Now, let's expand this out for 10 years.
Okay. And what do I do that on this thing?
You take the date range and you go custom, or you say show 10 years or something like that.
I got a period thing. It says daily.
Yeah. Yeah, daily's fine. And then next to that, it should say time period or something.
It says update, says inspect. I don't have the expensive one you've got.
No, I don't have that one either anymore.
Oh. Okay, I'll go down here. Daily, fill the chart, extra bars, size.
I'm going. Hang on a second. AIG. Okay, go to where it says, fill the chart. Let's see. Daily. Go to weekly and go to... Well, go to 3 years.
Where do I see that?
Where it says period weekly?
Period weekly.
Period
then.
Daily. You see, all right, period daily, right?
Yeah.
Go with the next one over. It says range 3 years, doesn't it?
Oh. Ah.
Okay. Or, fill a chart. Fill a chart. Maybe try that one. Did you do that one?
Yeah.
And then on the bottom it says update.
Right.
So let's go to 3 years.
Two.
Update.
All right, so I'm looking
okay.
at... Yeah.
So the higher the 3 years was $52, right?
Right, looks good.
Okay, now, on the where it says predefined range, you see predefined range there or something there? Predefined range? Click down the range, it says the predefined range. Right below, fill the chart.
Oh, okay, predefined range, what do we want?
And then click on... you can only go 3 years. Oh, that's terrible. What about... Just change it over to weekly. You see over to the left, period weekly?
Yeah, I got weekly.
All right, let's change that up. They don't let you do this either, huh?
No, it goes back to the 2010. It doesn't go any further.
Really? Let me update this. Let me see.
I should go to Yahoo and do it.
Yeah, this is getting merely aggravating. Weekly, let me see a predefined range. Yeah, you can only do 3 years. Screw that. Go to Yahoo. Look at a 10-year chart.
Well, actually, they have a max you can look at. It usually goes out to quite a bit.
Google Charts does this as well. Most charting programs, you can just click a button that says like 10 years or something like that, or max or whatever.
Okay.
I'm going back to 78. I'm looking back to 1978.
Okay, let me look at this.
Share with you that since 1978, the stock is up 120%. Okay? But the rise from 78, you see this chart?
I don't get to 78. I got to 1985.
Okay, fine.
But it still goes up to 2,500.
It makes that straight line on the bottom look silly now, doesn't it?
Oh, yeah.
So this is actually what happened with AIG was, if you recall, they were potentially going out of business, or at least that's the view from most players. And what happened was that it really didn't go to 2,500, 2,200 or so. What happened was they did like a 100-to-1 reverse split.
But so that really, that's supposed to be reflected in these charts.
It is. It definitely is. It's reflected because the price is at 2,000, when in fact the price now is 37, which maybe is only really 37 cents.
Oh, okay. Interesting. 37 cents. Well, this thing was rocking and rolling, that's for sure.
Oh, yeah. It was moving. It was doing great. From 94, it went from, 95. It went from about 500 up to 2,000 in 2000.
Actually,
then it came down a bit and then went from about $1,500 down to $37 from 2007 to now.
Now, there's your short.
You know, why didn't we pick it at that point, right?
Well, that's a short to retire on.
Yeah, now look at this chart.
So the short actually is what the short was. It was dead money for since about.
It's still dead money.
It's yeah, really it was. Now it's dead money, but it's penny. But it was dead money and sitting there at $1,500 when you would have shorted it.
It wouldn't have been $1,500. It would have been maybe.
Whatever. Just on a basis.
Yeah.
And it would have plumped. Essentially, what the chart looks like, $1,500 to $7. I mean, that's got to be a gold mine.
Yeah.
How can we miss that?
Seven is it's nothing. I mean, you know, it's just nothing. But here's what's interesting. 2008, they slowed down paying the dividends. They got paying dividends back recently of, well, actually zero. Did they pay a special dividend here? Oh, no, they did a 1-for-20 split in 2009. They must have done another split there somewhere along the way. Let's see. I don't have any other splits, but they only did a 1-for-20 reverse split. Let me think what that would be. 1-for-20, $1,500. They probably lost 70%. I have 2009 a 1-for-20 split. I thought it was a little bit more than that, though.
Yeah, well, there it is. Yeah, I see it.
So now,
so they split going up, 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 and then they split going down, down. I mean, it's unbelievable. So it's a great chart.
Yeah. So what's really interesting now is if you bring it back to like more of a recent period here. So why are they playing this? I mean, because first of all, it is kind of a penny stock, right? But you know, they could play it not like a penny stock because everybody kind of forgot what the price was of this thing. You know, you don't remember now. It's $37. And the thought is, if you look at that longer chart, you think, wait. What if this company gets some legs here? And even if it goes to $100 a share, it's nowhere near its potential.
Right.
I mean, just to get to $500 a share, seriously, $500 a share, it's still nowhere near where it should be.
Yeah, it was a falling knife at 500.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that there's that whole hope there that there's going to be some kind of, you know, even a move, again, even a double at this point, is still nothing.
Huh.
Didn't get you any, you know, so that's what they're playing it for.
Well, you think that's wise? Or is this kind of, I mean, is this company really just out of business or what?
No, I mean,
what do you think?
I think that the idea here is that the hedge funds are on the bandwagon of, you know what? It can't get much worse. If it gets any worse for this company, the government's there. They bailed them out once. They may do something and have their back, and they have some of their back already. They offloaded a lot of their bad debt. They took billions and billions of dollars and gave it to, or, you know, put it on with the Fed in their Maiden Lane side fund. You know about that?
No.
The Fed has a hedge fund or a holding company or whatever you want to call it. It's called Maiden Lane. If you ever want to look that up and see what's going on with it, it's very interesting. And what they did is they offloaded this horrendous debt, the stuff that was just nobody wanted. Now, supposedly throughout the years, Maiden Lane has made a lot of money on this debt, supposedly. But they offloaded all the bad debt. It's kind of like, you know, if you have a real bad situation, you're earning some money, you know, you got some problems. And I just say, you know what, John, I'll take your debt off your hands until you can rebuild and recapitalize, especially the bad stuff. You know, that you're holding. If you were borrowing, in other words, if you were a company that took on debt, if you maybe, you know, loan money to homeowners to buy some homes and some businesses. And I find the worst of that. The guys are just not paying and all the problems. And I just take it off your hands. Now you have good cash flow coming in, right?
I would hope.
I'm going to also say, hey, you know what? I'll give you some money to kind of carry on for a while until you can get yourself on the, you know, back in business. And at the same time, I'll let you possibly and I'll buy a bunch of your company from you and give you all this capital to work with. And then one day you'll buy the company back from me and, you know, then we kind of go on your merry way if things don't work out. Of course, if things do work out. If they don't work out, we'll just keep on doing the same thing. Ha ha. How great is that? So that's kind of what happened with AIG. The question is, you know, how much are they really involved in the derivative business? You know, how much exposure they have to Europe? You know,
well, considering the stock is essentially after the 20-to-1 split, the reverse split, it looks like it's about $1.75 compared to the olden days.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Doesn't seem like much of a downside risk.
Right. Exactly. I agree. I mean, yes, it's been moving around. I mean, who is it now? Berkowitz from the Fairholme Fund has, I think, some enormous, by the way. I mean, like 30 or 40% of his hedge fund in there. Some enormous amount. And a lot of players are doing the same thing, figuring, you know, again, yeah, banking is going to recover. How bad could it be, even if I take it, whatever? And what happened was that AIG actually has come back over the last, let's call it the year, to being profitable, supposedly, at least from the earnings reports they show us, and then you have to decipher them, to making a return, I think. What are they up year to date? What's AIG
up year to date? They doubled, haven't they?
So year to date, let's go year to date. Year to date, this year they're up 7%. Let's go one full year.
Yeah,
one full year.
Last year
they're up 32% for one full year. 5 years where the problem comes in. 5 years they're down 96%. 10 years they're down 96%. So, you know, if you think about this seriously, I mean, a company is down 96%. It's currently worth, what does market cap? $55 billion. $55 billion, and it's down 96%. That's just unbelievable.
Very interesting.
Earnings per share of $4.15, which is, like, you know, not too bad, 10%. Institutional owned 84%. You know, so and they got all these cases against all these banks and all this stuff. So there's all this potential. There's a whole web of legal issues that are kind of surrounding this whole thing. So that's the number one on that. Let's continue along before we get to our stocks. Real quick, the VIX was up 32% yesterday on Monday. One of the largest, one of the top 10 or 11 largest moves in the history of the VIX.
Well, the VIX isn't that old.
Well, still up 32%, which is pretty significant. Although from a very low point. I mean, it was when it was at 12, we were like, what in the world? How's it getting over here with all the headwinds? It's going to see a pop one of these days. And it didn't happen for a while. And then all of a sudden, in about 3 days, it was up 50%. Dropped about 8% today.
I think it's all the sequestering thing is making it go up.
Yeah, the sequestering and the Europe and all
see
that
what
stuff.
Happens on Friday.
Yep. And then a couple of other things here. One of the things to watch, I want you to all think about this as a contrarian signal. When you read in the newspaper on the weekends especially that you say, oh, you know, hedge funds traders and speculators drop their position in X commodity, the lowest they've had in 6 months, or they raise their bullish bets to the highest they've been in a year, whatever it may be, right? I want you to think about that as a contrarian signal. So we saw this weekend the discussion about how gold traders just are kind of bailing, it's all over and all that. And meanwhile, I think gold is up $30 in the last 2 days.
Hmm.
There you go. 3D printing, a 3D printing company got whacked yesterday, down about 12% yesterday. And DDD has been on a downward slope. Although I will say that it is getting to buying territory, if not there.
Yeah. We're not holding any of it in our fake portfolio.
Nope. We're not holding fake shares in our fake portfolio. Nope. You want to go there right now?
Yeah, I might as well. Doesn't look that good today.
Doesn't look great. Let's see what's going
Lots
on here.
Of reds.
Apollo Group. Well, I got to stop.
Apollo Group is out. You've been kicked out of that.
17.20. Yeah, there was...
Mine are just languishing, except a couple of them are crapping out. The Housing Recovery Lennar Corporation is down. I'm just about to get kicked out of it.
You're out.
I am out?
Yep. Yeah, it's close enough to 10. I can't round it anymore to the 10. So
okay,
it's
that's fine. It's fine.
It's yellow, isn't it? Yeah, it's yellow.
And then at AMD, I think I'm just ahead of the curve on this one. I'm going to go back into it later.
Yes, you are definitely a man that is ahead of others on this.
Yeah.
I agree.
Yeah, should have shorted it. And the rest of it is just nothing. It's just boring.
Walmart was short on, and we thought it was a good short. Actually, came up with earnings that were ahead of estimates, although very disappointing overall, in my opinion. Murphy Oil, you had some. It was actually doing well there for a couple of days, and it was kind of hanging in there. The McGraw-Hill Company, the S&P thing, which, to be honest with you, we could be a lot worse off there. You know, with all the stuff that's going on there?
Yeah, yeah.
Up 1%. Corn Fund up 6.5%. That's with short corn. Short Amazon, which is, I think, one of the better shorts of a while here, up 8.3%.
Did you do that one? Because I thought I shorted Amazon.
Nope. Sorry. Very sorry. Nope. And that was the day of earnings. We actually, I think, top ticked the earnings on that morning. When the earnings came out the night before, it rose up real nicely.
Yeah, you hate Amazon. That's right.
Mm-hmm. So, what any stocks that you have? I mean, I got to tell you,
I'm going to put in on I think Cree.
Cree, really interesting.
Yeah, I was looking at these things because I want to do an article on them. And
I tell people what they do.
They do LEDs.
The lighting. There's a couple of companies like this. They do lighting.
Yeah, but they're the public one. The rest of them are all private. The good ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's one other though. Cree and Poly somebody or other or something.
Well, maybe. Mm-hmm. But they do LED lightings, and I got the NASCAR thing was on, and I'm always looking for some sort of what would jack up these lightings or the lighting that these guys do, and they do some pretty nice stuff. They got right now their lumen per watt is 6x incandescent, mm-hmm. and the lumen per watt on the compact fluorescence is about 4.
Hmm.
So they're moving way ahead on lumens per watt, which is a big deal because you want as much light as you can get out of a watt, not a little amount. Mm-hmm. And it was Richard Petty, the famous racer,
right,
from the olden days, who took his entire shop system. He's got a bunch of, I guess they manufactured engines or cars or something. I'm not sure, but he's got a big operation, and for race cars, and he put in the Cree lighting throughout, mm-hmm. and got a little press release on it, and apparently they're happier than pigs in slop with this lighting because they don't need as many fixtures. It's twice as bright. The place is well lit, and I've been looking for some lighting to light up my office a little bit better, and I'm thinking, well, why don't I just jump ahead of the pack here and get some Cree fixtures, like maybe 900 watts worth of lighting in the office. Which will be very low powered,
right?
It would be 900 watts of equivalent lighting. It would be something like 150, 200 watts, maybe.
Right.
So I thought this is one of these days. The stock is gonna this is a big deal at this LED stuff, and I might as well get in on one of them and see what happens.
Yeah, I want to try to find what that other company is. I'm kind of we've invested in it before, but just not. Let's see if I find it.
It could be a dud.
I don't see it.
Well, they have it when you look at Cree. Let me look up Cree. I always look up with the Yahoo thing. I look up the competitors, and Cree is at $44 and going up. Competitors, and they don't have one public one.
Really?
They just have Nichia Corporation, Osram Sylvania, Toyota, Gosai. And they don't have a comparison to a public company, and everything looks pretty nice in these guys.
Well,
except the
PE
is a little high, but apparently the growth rate is there.
Right. Is the growth rate there?
Well, I don't know if it's this there. I mean, is the company going to double every year? That's what it looks like. It has to keep up with that PE, but we'll see.
Right. Well, I'm going to buy something that this is a total flyer, total, way up on the flyer list, okay? This is something we've talked about several times. We keep kicking ourselves, and we keep forgetting to buy it or sell it or do something with it. So I'm going to buy at this point, because it is so volatile and crazy and just absolutely out of control, Medbox.
Medbox.
It was up 19% today.
Yeah.
But remember where we saw it last? Last time we looked, it was like 60.
Yeah.
Now it's 30.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It looks like a winner.
So this is the company that makes the they make the dispensers for different medicines, and in particular, they have some kind of special automatic or some kind of dispenser for marijuana.
Right, right. Anything that's got to do with marijuana looks like it could be a winner.
So we're going to pick this up here, and it could be one day we're out with this thing.
Yeah, could be.
You know, this is one of those crazy. So it's MDBX. And by the way, don't buy or sell anything that we talk about here, because this is not the venue that we are recommending or touting or suggesting any stocks. It's just a game we play. That's it. Seek professional, competent financial advice for any of the investing that you do. So we're going to say marijuana. What is it called? Dispensers?
I guess.
Yeah. Okay. There we go. And you're up for Cree. You're up a creek. Okay. I mean, we've done pretty well here. I mean, I got to tell you, you know, I mean, there's been a, we've had a, you know, a great deal of movers at many times. The problem again is the, you know, the rule we have where it's 10%, we're out no matter what. And even if you have a problem, like for example, I would take my profit on corn here. I think I mentioned this last week.
Right.
But, you know, we kind of have this rule that we stick with this till we have a 10% stop out. So which means the worst we could ever do on a stock is lose 10%. And the best we could ever do is make whatever, but then it backs down 10%.
Yeah, so, whatever you're made, you're going to lose 10% of that. And that's
exactly
the best you can do.
Right. I think you should start looking at Netflix again, by the way.
Yeah, I'm liking Netflix. I wrote about it recently. Whoops.
Yeah. You're saying something about how I read the article and you, of course, did a marvelous job of winding in the new series they have, the House of Cards. No, Netflix is no House of Cards, I think you said, or something like that.
That was a headline written by the editors. That was in Market Watch.
Yeah. And basically you were saying that this is a winning combination, if I can remember this correctly, was because you can watch the whole series at once if you want. You don't have to wait for it to come out. And this is a whole new way of watching, a series, TV series.
Yeah, it's the future.
I mean, I personally like when I can
– You like being manipulated by the large network so you have to be there on Tuesday night?
No. I like actually when I don't know of a show, let's say, and somebody says, hey, you have to watch this series. And I find it on Hulu or wherever I find it. And then we do like a marathon.
Oh, yeah. My wife and I do that all the time. She was started on the marathon for – what's that show with the guys, the drug maker, the meth maker – Breaking Bad.
Oh, Breaking Bad, yeah.
Yeah, she fell in love with that show and started watching it. And then she would, you know, you have to sit down with her, watch about 8 episodes. It's
right.
Like my favorite episode, by the way, which is still the funniest one, is where the guy's head is on the turtle. Have you ever seen this one?
No.
Oh, it's a great episode.
I don't watch Breaking Bad. I started watching, what's this other one with the zombies now?
The Walking Dead.
Yeah. Walking Dead. It's okay. I mean, I really enjoyed what did I enjoy? Oh, I like 666 Park Avenue, I think that, or whatever that's called.
Never seen it.
That one's kind of interesting. It's fun, you know. I like the actors in it and all that. Big fan of some of the older ones, though. The older shows. I mean, I was, you know, Lost and Sopranos, and my kids love Dexter. I mean, just love Dexter.
Yes, but well, one of these days when you don't do the show, I'll find you chopped up.
Yeah, or chopping somebody up. Probably chopping somebody up.
Yeah, I'm one of your traitors.
Yeah, exactly. All right, till we meet next week now. So let's just synchronize our clocks here. Friday is sequestration, and castration for the markets.
Well, if the thing sequesters out, I think they're going to kick the can down the road and it won't happen. But it would make sense because the crash months, and historically, and this should be a crash year of some sort, is always a March or October, and this is March.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so I think it's a possibility that the whole thing could come tumbling down, which puts our shorts in good position, but it doesn't do much for any of our we're kind of half and half, which is unusual.
Right.
It's always, to me, I've noticed this over the years, that when we're half and half, it's always a cusp, and then the neck and everything gets thrown out of the system except for the shorts or the longs, and then we just short everything the next show, and then we have about 2 weeks to clean up.
Yep. Yep, that happened. Yeah, shorts, you have to be quicker with shorts. I mean, unless you're in a long-term trend. Remember, I mean, one of the things that happens is that investors are very fast to sell usually and quickly and unload, and then they take their time, and over time they buy little bits and get longer and longer and longer. And one of the things about market corrections, why they are so violent, is if you think about it, if for an elongated period of time people are building and putting things in their portfolio and not selling – and that market correction happens. It happens when everybody is kind of loaded up, so they have more to sell.
Yeah, that makes sense.
You know, so that's what happens when I look at the commitment of traders. When you have everybody on one side and everybody's like real, everybody's bullish oil. Oh my God, bullish oil! All right, it lasts for a few weeks, but once a crack happens, it gets ugly for a couple of days.
Yeah.
So there we go.
We'll see what happens. All right. Talk to you next Tuesday.
All right. I look forward to it. I'm going to finish my horse steak right now and then go to bed.
Good. Yum.
Okay, thanks.
Adios.
Yeah, thanks. Bye.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, 'cause I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pockets, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a man. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, 'cause I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.